Welcome to this episode of the Grace and Grit podcast, where we candidly discuss one more topic relevant to women in today's culture. True femininity requires both the grace to honor those around us and the grit to stand for truth. I'm passionate about both and so happy to have you here. For additional information or contact options, you can find me on Facebook or Instagram or follow my blog at sarah-daigle.org.
Today, we're talking about finding joy after grief. Most of us have gone through a time of grief or experiencing grief right now. And if that's you, be sure to tune in. So, Sarah, we all experience loss in our lives, and most of us live through disappointments in various areas of our life. We lose our grandparents and parents, which can be a particularly painful loss. And some of us grieve the loss of key relationships, either through estrangement sometimes or separation or divorce. And the grief we feel is natural, and it's something that you and I are no strangers to, as we've both experienced the trauma of divorce. And yet we're here today talking about the joy that can come after the grief. We're all seeking the joy. And Sarah, I know you've spent a lot of time thinking through and processing through grief. So why do you think it is that people shy away from letting themselves feel grief?
It's such a loaded question. And I like to think when a baby's born, it's born into this world with just a capacity for love. It doesn't know anything else. You know, there's a reason that a baby cries when it's hungry or when it's lonely, even just when its mother lays it in the crib instead of holding it close, the baby cries because it wants that companionship. And so I think back to when God created us too, he created us in his image, which what is his image? It's love. So we're created in the image of God for the glory of God. And then somehow God created our spirit to be dissatisfied until we're satisfied in God. So we're really just meant to be connected to God and everything that comes from him. So I always look at it like when sin came into the world, you know, pain came as well, because nobody can sin without hurting someone. Either we hurt God or we hurt ourselves or we hurt someone else, sometimes all three. And I think in divorce situations, that is very, very keenly felt. And we shy away from experiencing grief because originally we weren't created for it. We have a far greater capacity in our hearts for love, joy, peace than we do for grief, than we do for, you know, murder or rape or anything like that, even though obviously we have sin nature after sin came. But originally God's intent, when we experience, anyone who experiences, you know, the shooting in Nashville, anything like that, we all cringe from that. Nobody's meant to be the victim of a murder. We're meant to be the recipients of love, not the victim of something evil. Mm-hmm. And so we shy away from it and we gravitate towards good experiences because that's why we were created. And yet we sometimes forget that part of the redemption story is to be able to experience things that cause growth in us. I think human nature gravitates towards the experience of feeling rather than the experience of growth. And so Shannon Curry, she's a forensic psychologist. She was talking about how when people fall in love, there is such a high amount of dopamine. And it's similar to the, you know, the feeling, the high people get when they're, you know, using cocaine or heroin, and how that dopamine rush in someone who's in love can be so intoxicating. So that's a good feeling, right? Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's a feeling everyone strives for, you know, movies, books, I don't know of any person really on this earth who wouldn't want that feeling at some point or another. And yet, psychologist Shannon Curry says that if that feeling, that high amount of dopamine, was in us for a sustained amount of time, our bodies could not bear up under it. Just fascinating to me. We all want it, that good experience, yet our bodies can't bear up under it, which means to me, it's like a really neat picture of how our spiritual souls can't always bear up under just ease. When we're satisfied with earth, we don't really long for heaven. You know, there's a satisfaction we get with the earth where we're not really longing to be satiated with heaven. So we crave the good feeling and we're born for it, but God redeems everything and lets us experience goodness out of other things as well. And we fail to see that. But once we see it, we no longer shy away from grief.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, and the reason that we shy away from grief also is that we really hate discomfort. We want to be in comfort, and sometimes it scares us. So we seek to escape from it. And, you know, we have questions sometimes, will it ever end? Will I get over this? Will I get through it? Will it overwhelm me? Will I lose myself in this grief? Because sometimes it feels like a wall just coming over us. And so we often seek things to escape those feelings or to put them off for a time. And that's where we get into a lot of addictions, that where we escape. But we know that distractions are never a solution for that. So Not helpful. But so what are some helpful ways that we can handle our grief or even in a particularly difficult day?
I think that goes back to what you were saying, is that by nature, as soon as we feel that quote negative feeling, we do try to escape it. And I think life changes when we learn to enter it instead. And I've noticed in myself, this is counterintuitive, but I've noticed in myself when I just have something that hits me hard, if I take a few hours, half a day, a whole day, to just give that grief space in my life. Recently, this is vulnerable, but recently I had something happen that was really hard for me to process. And I woke up on a Sunday morning and I stayed in bed, and that is not me. I am at church every Sunday, you know? But I knew from past experience that if I did just give myself the morning to process that and to cry and pray, that I would then be able to get up much sooner and be a good mom to my kids. Mm-hmm. And live life well. Whereas if I had suppressed that and just pushed through it really hard, like I've often done in the past, that would have hounded me for much, much, much longer. Mm-hmm. Doing it this way gives me one really hard day. The next day is hard, but it's easier. And by day three or four, I am back to normal. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a method that helps everyone, but I think a lot of us would benefit from that.
Well, I think what you're saying is that we have to actually, instead of try to escape the grief, to pay attention to it, mm-hmm. and to nurture it, to take care of ourselves in that grief, and not reject it or try to deny it. You know, not take a drink or eat an ice cream cone or take a drug, but actually to sit in it with the Lord and to allow it, to notice it, to allow it. And in that way, it can process. I think a way too, when we're going through longer term grief, is to just tune into the Lord frequently. We are so reliant on God, and we try to rely on ourselves often. But I think back to the how God fed the Israelites manna in the desert. He said, collect what you need for the day, not for tomorrow. So they couldn't store
so good. Yeah.
Future, what they wanted, but they had to gather it daily. And so it's like us with the Lord. And I think God wants to keep us dependent on him, because if we didn't need to turn to him, moment by moment and in every day, then we might fall into a trap of self-sufficiency. And rather we're designed to need God moment by moment.
Yeah.
And it's easy to forget, isn't it?
Yeah. And lining up with what you said, not looking into the future and panicking about 4 or 5 years from now, the Lord brought me through the past 5 years, not easily, but he did a good job of it. He never gave me more than he could handle. He did give me more than I could handle, but not more than he could handle for me. And yet it was minute by minute and day by day. I could not project years into the future. It would have been too much to handle. So I like what you said there. Yeah.
And we know that God's grace is only able to flow to us in the present. It's not in yesterday or tomorrow. It's in today only. So Sarah, what does it mean to invite Jesus into our grief, which when we're connecting with him, we, can invite him to be with us in that grief. So what does that mean to you?
I think for me, it just means just crying out to him. And I think when I do that, he leads me in different ways. Sometimes he might lead me to stay in my room for a few hours. Other times he might lead me to skydiving or hiking or seeing a friend or calling my mom. Like when we do invite the Lord into our grief, he gets pretty creative with what might help us. You know, it's a really good time to kind of tune into what makes us come alive. Because there are going to be days where it will be really unhealthy to just cry and sit with the grief. And then there are days where you really need to. So the days where you don't need to, though, I have just found so much life, and all life comes from the Lord, right? Healing or even just joy and seeing things bigger than ourselves. I have found so much life in, mountains that are bigger than me, or jumping out of a plane 2 miles in the air because the act of that was bigger than my fear. And so sitting in an airplane, watching other skydivers jump out into the sky, and just me wanting to die because it felt like something I couldn't do. Well, doing that anyway, really kind of gave me a jolt out of my head space and showed me that bigger things than me can happen, bigger things than my grief are going on. Not that skydiving's bigger than a divorce, but we just get so locked into our grief. And I think when we bring the Lord into it, the very act of redemption doesn't always lift us out like a helicopter coming into a war zone and lifting us straight up and out. He does bring us out. He wants to enter, not so that we stay in the same place forever. He wants to enter so he can walk with us and then bring us out. And so I think just keeping an open mind, like, who did the Lord create me to be? I mean, if you're adventurous, hop on the back of a motorcycle and go speed through the mountains. Like, just do whatever makes you come alive, as long as it's good and healthy. And I would also add, bringing the Lord into my grief also meant that I had to be very careful with things that were not healthy, with men, with, any kind of alcohol, anything that could have become just a vice or a downfall. I had to be really careful with those things and have strict guidelines. And I think This is a place where the enemy gets a lot of people and trips them up, is when we don't bring the Lord into those really hard places. We start getting desperate, we start getting graspy, and we start reaching out for all those things. And we end up making our grief worse. So that's always the end result of something the enemy does, is he makes whatever problem we have so much worse with momentary fixes. And then, but the Lord, he puts up boundaries and guidelines. I love the topic of boundaries, and a lot of people use it selfishly, but we forget that the Lord has boundaries, and they're good, and they're very unselfish, but they're protective, and they're loving, and they allow the Lord in to keep us from things. So,
yeah, it reminds me of a little comic where you see a mountain road and you see a guardrail there, and the guy is running toward the guardrail, and he said, "I'm not going to allow any fence to keep me in," and he's going and jumping over, and the wise man is saying, "That's not a fence, that's a guardrail." As he's falling, it's like the commandments and guidelines that the Lord has for us, they're not fences. They're not to prevent us from something good, but rather to protect us from something that's going to hurt us. And we don't always recognize that.
Yeah. One of my favorite quotes along those lines is just that God's no is never meant to deprive us. It's always meant to invite us.
Mm-hmm. Love that.
Yeah, it's powerful.
So we hear the phrase that time heals all wounds. Does time heal? What do you think?
It's kind of a trick question. I would say it depends how you use that time. Time for some people makes them excessively bitter, makes them brittle, makes them literally turn into people nobody wants to be around, you know? And we've all been around those people where it's just like, oh no, and we have to like protect ourselves from whatever they project into the atmosphere, because it's just so damaging. So I would say time does not heal, unless you bring the Lord into that time with you, and you also utilize, therapy and just anything that God provides, anything good is from the Lord. And if you do it that way, I think time does heal, but I don't view it so much as time healing. I view it as the Lord used a lot of things over a long period of time to help me heal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Well said. I think time can take the edge off of our pain, in that time helps things to fade from view, and there's more memories and more history that have been laid since that traumatic event. But I agree, it's really only from releasing it or processing it that our grief can really experience, that we can experience healing in our grief. And I think releasing to God those losses versus holding on to it or fighting it, because sometimes we just fight it, you know, like maybe we're angry about something, where there are negative emotions like anger or bitterness, like you were saying, or resentment, especially when it comes to a loss like divorce or another type of loss of relationship, where it's very complicated. And it's just, I find that in my work with people who are divorced, I find people who are divorced 4 years, 14 years, 40 years, and they haven't healed, because they're still in bitterness and resentment. And until we get in and process that, and untangle some of that, then you see in a matter of days or weeks that anger and that resentment is released, and then the healing occurs.
Yes.
After tens of years.
Yes.
Which is amazing. So it's so clear to me that it's really the Lord, that us working with the Lord is what heals. I mean, he is the healer. We can't heal on our own. And so it just makes me think about, you know, for people who are dealing with grief, that if it's been a while and you're not healing, that get help, because
yes,
because it's possible. And there are ways that, that, you know, people can help you to release that grief that you do not deserve to be carrying. It's not what God wants for us, is to carry ongoing grief.
And we're designed to carry it.
He didn't, right. He didn't equip us, he designed us to carry it. And he did design us for joy.
Yes.
And that's what comes when the grief is processed and released. So, but here's a tough one. Sometimes we pray and we ask God for help and we ask him to change our circumstances, solve a problem that's hurting us. And so what happens when we beg God and he doesn't swoop in and change those circumstances? And so we're still in a period of difficulty, of grief, of hardship. So what happens then, Sarah?
Wow, that's a really big question. I remember when I was walking the trail behind my house, begging God to save my marriage. And I had a little pile of stones and I was going to put a stone on top of stone on top of stone every time God answered a prayer. And I was hoping that in a year, there'd be a whole stack of stones. And every time I took a walk, I could remember what God did. Well, obviously the exact opposite happened. And instead of stones being built, it was like my entire life came down until there was nothing left. And so, but I have to think, every time I think about my own life in that way, I think about Jesus. First of all, he left the throne, which would have been a huge step. Came to be a baby, which was quite lowly, in a lowly town.
In a manger.
in a stinky manger, yeah. To a virgin who could have been stoned for having a baby.
Yes.
Who's fiance almost ditched her because he thought she cheated. I mean, everything surrounding that was God saying no to human desire at the base. But then as he grew older, it wasn't easy. Being Jesus wasn't easy. But I think the most powerful thing is when he was in the garden and he was begging God and the sweat was falling off his face, like, you know, drops of blood, it says, because he was so stressed out. And I think of that, Jesus begging God to change his circumstance, us begging God to change our circumstances, actually being like Jesus. Like we think of those emotions, like how dare we beg God, plead with God to change our circumstance. And yet Jesus did that. There are so many human elements to Jesus that we sometimes forget. But God said no to him. God said, you know, he had to carry the weight of the sin of the whole world. He had to die a brutal death. He had to be beaten. He had to all these things. And so when Jesus got that no, you know, what does he do? He doesn't keep fighting it and keep begging God. He radically accepts the cross.
Your will, Father.
Yes. Yeah. And for me, that is the key. When God says no, to radically accept it. And that could be, you know, as big as as my marriage not being healed, or it could be a small thing that I want that God's just, it just hasn't happened, you know, and I don't know why. And I could compare myself to other people and be like, why can't I have that? But to radically accept what God does in your life is so freeing. And ironically, I didn't learn that from, you know, a religious therapist. I first heard that phrase from, you know, just secular therapy, radical acceptance. Take a deep breath when you're wanting to panic or freak. take a deep breath and let your entire body and mind radically accept what's happening.
Yeah.
And then from there, the Lord will show you. But surrender, it's called surrender. But a lot of people, I think, will relate more easily mentally to the term radical acceptance. Mm-hmm. We do it best with the Lord, but even those who don't know the Lord, they can use that tool to keep from going nuts. And hopefully that will lead them to the Lord, because the end of all peace is found in Christ. We know that.
Yes. Yeah. And when we think about radical acceptance, we're not saying that we accept, like that we approve of this bad thing that happened to us. It's not saying it's okay. All right. I will submit to this bad thing. It's more that we're accepting the reality that it is.
Exactly.
We're accepting the reality. This has happened. And so now we have to deal with it in reality. And I always think about how God is always with us when we ask for things and then things don't go our way. You know, we know that God is always with us. He's walking with us. He's right there. And he knows us so intimately, and he knows exactly what we need. And sometimes we need to wait. We need to learn lessons. And I think about, sometimes we need to run out of our own self-sufficiency and in order for us to receive what it is we need, maybe don't want or even know that we need, but he allows us to run out of our own self-sufficiency before he can step in without subverting our own free will, because, you know, we take control over things and we shut him out sometimes. But I also think about a parent with a little toddler who is learning to walk. And the toddler has to fall a few times in order to learn and be able to walk and then run. Mm-hmm. And as parents, we don't say, oh, you could fall and hurt yourself, so we're not going to allow you to walk. We're going to prevent that pain. No, we allow it. We don't prevent the walking, but we're there to pick that child up every time and be with them, comfort them, be with them through the pain of falling, and then be with them through the joy of walking.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So talking about radical acceptance, how does that help a person heal? To radically accept. And I think we have about 3 or 4 minutes left here, Sarah.
Radical acceptance. How does that help a person heal? First of all, I think it brings peace to our emotions, because fighting against anything is hard, right? But I just think also, it lets us enter into what's happening. And that kind of goes into the last thought I had, where when Jesus entered the tomb, he had to enter that death so that he could come out of the death. He would have never come out. Like, we wouldn't have Easter Sunday celebrating Jesus's, you know, resurrection if he hadn't first entered the tomb and died. Yeah. And so radical acceptance and surrender lets you enter your grief, because coming out of our grief makes the resurrection so real. And we just had, you know, we just celebrated Easter Sunday, and it was a beautiful time for all of us. But I think for me, I think of grief as entering the tomb so that I can walk out of it with Jesus. Not so that I can live there hovering for the rest of my life, but so that I can walk out. And to me, that's just beautiful. And it makes everything worth it, because I think the darker your experience, the brighter your light, mm-hmm. when you give in to light instead of darkness.
Yes, exactly. We stop fighting and we allow the Lord to take the control even through our pain.
Yeah.
And trusting, it's about trust too, isn't it? That he knows what's good for us, and that even if we do have pain, that he's with us in it. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So are there any last thoughts that you'd like to leave with our listeners as a final word, Sarah?
just that there's hope, never to give up, and to use, you know, scriptures tells us to redeem our time. And when we're in grief, it's hard to even think of utilizing our time wisely. But there are so many days where people might not have energy to pursue something that maybe takes more effort. Mm-hmm. But at least we all can put up boundaries against the things that would destroy us further. So I think that's my encouragement. You know, give yourself a lot of grace. Don't push yourself too hard, but do keep those boundaries with the Lord so that you can come out instead of dig yourself in deeper.
Yes. Yes. And yeah, and I would just add, stay close to the Lord minute by minute, hour by hour, if you need to, leaning on his strength, and use your resources around you. You know, your loved ones who can help you. Don't walk in isolation, and get the help that you need.
Yeah.
So thank you for your wisdom and for sharing all that with us today, Sarah.
Thank you, Carolyn. You too. Enjoyed talking to you.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Grace and Grit podcast. For more information or contact options, you can find me on Facebook and Instagram or follow my blog at sarah-daigle.org.